has joined.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Is it just you?
I think so. Oh, good.
Good evening to both of you.
Okay. Thank you.
So we are in section 26 of Parsha Vayera on the Sulam commentary on the Zohar. And we're beginning with verse 370. And we'll start with L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud kucha b'rifu ishkin tebit kilu urchimu utkilu utkilu urchimu le'achda l'shem yudhe b'vavhe le'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael limud Torah mitzvah la'asok Torah mitzvah v'ayhino amadunai Elohino alena ma'asei adena f'nanei alena ma'asei adena f'nanehu Ugin kach b'shata dedina shariyo b'mata ba'e barnash le'arka ad la'ipas saman deha mechabila ewan b'share hakena me'aved l'zaka'a v'chayay va וכל שכן דחו דלתיהם כחד וחו תבע דיתוק יון כולו או ישתזון כולו בגין דחד יתעבד ניסה לא יתעבד פעל גו ניסה Ufalgo dina ela kola kachada o nisa o dina. The translation. Therefore, when judgment hangs over a city, a man should flee before he is captured there and falls into the hands of the destroyer. Once the angel of destruction resides in a place, he treats the righteous the same as the wicked, all the more so as all three of them were together. This refers to Joshua the high priest and the other two false prophets, Ahab, the son of Koliah, and Sidkiyahu, the son of Masiah. The Satan demanded that all be burned or all be saved, because if a miracle is to occur, there cannot be half a miracle. It must be the same for all. Either miracle or judgment. My commentary. This pasuk is clear as written with Rabbi Ashlag's comments. Of course, this is a legal argument. It is actually not true. Equal justice is if two souls have the same thoughts and the same actions, they will receive the same effects. Yet there is never two souls with the same thoughts and actions. Questions, comments, thoughts.
Well, it makes me think of the effects of the hurricanes, how one house can be destroyed and one house be completely missed. You know, it's pretty much the same type of destruction, but handling it differently.
Well said. I had a experience in 93, maybe it was 94. There was an earthquake in Northridge, and I had my business was in Northridge. And literally, one of the Kabbalah centers, because I started at the Kabbalah Center in 91, one of the Kabbalah Center Phebra had stopped by and left a set of Zohar in my building. But I was leasing 10,000 square feet in a 40,000 square foot building. There were four different businesses in this building. And the night or the morning of the earthquake, it was, you know, like six in the morning. And it was on a Sunday morning. And that Saturday, that Shabbat, Rabbi Berg had made the announcement that there would no longer be a California earthquake called a big one. It was no longer going to happen. And that morning, you know, like 12 hours later, there's another earthquake. And I had stayed over in a friend's house, and my daughter was home in my house. And I'm thrust out of bed by the earthquake. I get hold of my daughter and find out she's okay and that our house is okay. And so I'm starting to drive home, which is like 35 miles away. And as I go down the street, literally I could see this house is destroyed. This building on the main street is destroyed. And the next one, there's nothing wrong. The business is untouched. So I decide to go to my business before I go home because I know my daughter's all right. And so as I drive up, the building that I'm in is destroyed, except for my 10,000 feet. There was no damage. And I came to understand, literally, as I was driving down the main streets to get to my business, and you would see one building destroyed and one building no damage. The thought occurred to me, the person who owns this building or renting this building that got destroyed, this is the effect of their actions. And the buildings that aren't destroyed, while they're participating in the shakeup of the earthquake, the fact that it wasn't destroyed was indicating that their actions, they're merited not to have the same effect as the building next to them. And it's all related to human activity. And that's exactly what Hannah was just describing. We don't know for sure. We can't know what someone did. We don't know what their thoughts, what their consciousness. We don't know everything. You know, people do things in secret. People do things in public. We don't know. And it's not up to us to judge that. We have to feel the pain of the person who lost financially. We have to help them. We need to help them. It's doing a good deed to help them. But in the overall awareness of how Hashem runs his world, these are the consequences of negative actions.
Well, just the presence of the Zohar in the house, I think, too, plays a big part.
It is a big part. It absolutely is true. If you have a set of books of the Zohar, it is it, because that's what I attributed to why my corner, my fourth of the building wasn't destroyed, because the
Zohar was there.
Say again, Brandy?
I said the Zohar was there.
Yes, he had left it there and asked if I would hold on to it because he didn't want to, excuse my expression, schlep it back and have to carry it in and out of the building. It was a shorter walk from his car to my building than where he would have to park his car and then schlep it into the Kabbalah Center. So, you know, he was tired. It was a long day. And, you know, so he left it there. It literally, it was a, a, that same week, you know, I attributed it. He wasn't on a conscious level why he did that, but it was a Hashem orchestrating cause and effect. And I'm not saying I was righteous, because at the time, I'm not righteous now. How do I say I was righteous then? I was in a much worse shape. But the these things are happen for a reason. Everything happens for a reason. We all know that adage. We all kind of accept it as true. But when you have hurricanes and earthquakes, you're able to see the effect of that adage.
We had a storm here, and before the storm, I had made a request of someone in a position that was higher than me for the business that I was overseeing, and they gave me a nasty reply. And I was very hurt because I felt that I was doing the best I could for the position I was in and the building I was in. So the storm came and I stayed here. And I prayed all night long in my upstairs house for our city and for the building and for my house and for other people, and I never lost electricity, and I never lost water. And what happened was, and I've never seen this happen before, the building that the person that was in charge of that was over me, that building completely flooded on all four sides, and it came through the ceiling at the same time. And that building was put out of commission for almost a year. And the building that I was trying to take care of only had one window, because it was a double hung window. The top part of the window blew out. And that was all that happened to that building. And I was so sad for, you know, the person that was over me in the building they were taking care of, because other people had gone there to take refuge. But, you know, things happen. You never know why.
We don't know why. And it's not up to us to judge it.
That's right.
But it's also what this verse, the important aspect of this verse, what it's saying and reinforcing, because it's hinted at and said it in earlier verses in this section. When Satan is given permission to create chaos in the world, if you're in public, meaning Satan can see you, it's not his job to have a negative effect to one person and a positive effect to another. That's not his job. He is given permission. When he's given the permission to do all this chaos, he is given permission to do it to every person who he sees. Now, I asked my Kabbalist teacher, well, this doesn't make sense. It's not true justice. And so I asked him to explain it to me. How could this be true justice? Because we know that Hashem is always strictly just. And the answer that came back is, both of these people are living in the same generation. And the generation is being judged. It's not just the one individual.
Oh my goodness. And
that's why Satan is given that permission. And it really, we need to always remember, Hashem is always just. We don't see the whole picture. We don't see why this person has a more severe effect than another person. But the effect of the chaos is going to be applied to everybody, especially if it's the community is being judged, because both righteous and evil people, I don't want to say evil people, righteous and non-righteous people are both going to receive the effect that Satan has been authorized to give. And we don't see that one's righteous, one's not righteous. We see Satan emitting his chaos, and the other one, who may not be paying attention and has allowed himself to be seen, is going to receive the same similar effect. Did I go on to 371?
Yes, I think so.
Yes, please.
Although I thought it was interesting to see the genealogy of Ahab.
Yes.
Bitkiahu.
Well, we have to be told the lineage in order to identify where in the Nach, where in the prophets this story, this connection is being made.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 371. Amar lo Rabbi Yosei wela weha vizimna Ivaka kutsha barichu yamar li Yisrael Tawa kara yamar li ilin viazlin viabeshta umayayo hawo tavin Mi sitra achara, v'tavin le'ilen, u'meitin v'ishtekach. Mi sa haka, v'dina haka, kola kachada. Rabbi Yossi said to him, "That is not so. For when the Holy One, blessed be He, split the sea for Israel, He divided the sea only for those, namely the children of Israel. They walked on dry land while the waters came together again and drowned the others, namely the Egyptians, who perished. So there was a miracle on one side and judgment on the other, even though they both occurred together." This pasuk is clear as written with Rabbi Ashlag's comments. See my comments for the verse 370 that we just read. Can you explain why the Egyptians were drowned and the children of Israel were allowed to walk on dry land and gain the other side? Questions, comments, thoughts?
Well, I think Hashem was still showing himself strong in behalf. I know because of the deity that was worshipped that he didn't come against that, if you want to say little god, you know, of the Egyptians with the plagues. So that gave Pharaoh thinking Baal-Zephon was much stronger than the god of the Hebrews, and that's why they chased after them. And so here was the opportunity, you know, to still say that he was stronger than any of the gods of Egypt.
But he had no need to prove that he was stronger than any of the other Elohim.
Well, I felt like he was every time he came up, you know, had a plague.
Yes.
You know, each one was as well against one of the gods. You know, Frigga was the fog.
Each plague, he
was the sun god. And this one, when you saw his picture, it's on Wikipedia. He looks like Neptune a lot, with his hair that looks like seaweed, and he's holding a scepter, and he's got a crown on his head, and he has this humongous sword. And we know the relationship to the Tetragrammaton and the shape of the sword. And then his shirt under his vest, there's a Star of David in the middle. So it was like he was pictured to be, you know,
is this a
king of gods, I guess you would say.
Is this a vision that you've had in a dream or a vision? Or is this something you saw on a picture?
No, this is something I studied and for Bishop Locke a year ago when we had the ladies' meetings, that we learned that the place where the children, after they had crossed, and saw Pharaoh and his army coming, the name of the place was a place, but it was also the name of their deity. It had to do with that area of the Yam Suf. And it was an eye opener. And I mean, maybe you could say Midrash, but
It's a Midrash, and I understand. I'm just clarifying it so for people, because the way you're describing it is it's actual, and it's not that it's not actual. It's what people have built, and it's part of the archaeology. But that's I'm not criticizing it. I'm just explaining it.
I know, and I just remember the, you know, the study.
But let me answer the question that I asked that you're relating to it, because it's not that Hashem needs to show his strength.
Well, the Hebrews had to make a decision, just like the, you know, they. That's why so many didn't leave Egypt, and that's what I meant by showing himself strong. They had to make a decision. You know, are you going to follow Hashem or are you going to stay in Egypt?
And so, and they followed Moshe. Many did they follow Hashem? They were still had the mentality of slaves. It was only 7 days since they'd left Egypt. You know, were they following Hashem or were they following a man? So the result of the thing, if you remember the Midrash. Well, if you'll let me finish, please. If you remember the Midrash, Satan came to Hashem and said, how do you deal with these differently? They're both, these are sinners and those are sinners. The Egyptians are sinners and the Hebrews are sinners.
Three paws, no claws. Put them claws back in. Oh.
I'm sorry?
That wasn't me, so.
Okay. Anyway, so I can finish the discussion and give you an answer to the question that I asked. The Midrash says that they're both, Satan is saying they're both sinners. And Hashem's answer is, I will do what I will do. But the discussions in the Talmud is about this discussion. The Egyptians had been destroyed by the 10 plagues. But if you go back to the beginning of when Moses first goes to Pharaoh, to Paro, he says, let my people go for 3 days into the desert to serve Hashem. He's not saying they're going to leave. He's not saying they're going to be dealt with this way. He's saying they're going to go for 3 days for a specific ritual or whatever the plan was. But it was because Pharaoh refused to allow them to go. that he caused the 10 plagues. Each time he was brought back to that level of deciding what did he really want to do, and he always wanted to harm the children of Israel. And that desire, which was not just his, it was the other people, that's what caused the Egyptians to be treated differently. Now, on a physical level, the children of Israel had already crossed the sea, so they were no longer in the same place. It wasn't a question of this can be saved and that shouldn't be saved, because that's what actually was happening. It wasn't that there were any children of Israel left behind. Remember, the fire had gone back and separated them until the children of Israel had crossed the sea. So it's not the same thing as when we say, oh, there's an earthquake, and both the righteous and the non-righteous are having the effect of that earthquake. That's what happens. But in the crossing of the sea, the splitting of the Yom Kippur, it was clearly... But I apologize, I do need to leave. We're out of time. So if we want to carry on and talk about this tomorrow, we can. Shalom. Shalom Gadol.